Okay, so today I'm going to be in conversation with Ewan Ebbett. And I wondered, Ewan, if we could start maybe with you kind of telling us a little bit about your area of practice, and the work that you do.
So my name's Ewan. I use they, them pronouns. I am an integrative counsellor. I work relationally using CBT, psychodynamic, and person-centered. I've worked with London Friend and Clinic Q, so kind of real specific LGBT focus work, Clinic Q's trans and non-binary people, as well as family members of trans and non-binary people, just kind of working through that transition process from both sides. And then London Friend, I worked within again LGBT, gay, bisexual, men have sex with men, lesbians, so kind of the whole spectrum of the LGBTQIA plus population. And I'm a queer person. There we go.
And I wondered, like, what was your journey into this area of work and kind of this kind of profession, I guess, more generally?
It kind of it, I don't know, it's always felt like a maybe a calling that I kind of tried to ignore for a bit. And I felt I think my family's very in the same sort of field. We're all very similar, kind of. We've got art psychotherapy, therapists and social workers in the family. So kind of was we're all in the same field. And actually before I started training, I was in therapy myself, and my therapist at one point said, after I kept saying, I think I want to train as a therapist. And he said, well, if you the first time you'd said this and started training, then you would have finished by now. So there's a bit of a like, okay, maybe I'll do it now then. Felt a bit pushed, but I think it just kind of made sense. I worked in homelessness, substance use, learning disability, which all really gave me specifically like the person-centered like core conditions were really ingrained in learning disability support. And then it kind of just through there moved on, and then kind of trained, and I suppose it feels like I fell into it, but I think it's probably, if you looked at it, it makes a lot of sense, the trajectory.
And I guess I was wondering, kind of, because it sounds like your training was perhaps quite broad, but the area of work you're doing now is more kind of specialist. And I wondered what maybe drew you beyond kind of therapy and training to that particular area of practice as well.
Well, I think within seeing, like, whenever I've gone to therapy in the past, so my first therapist, I don't think they exclusively identified as queer. I don't know that now, but I went to her, and it was kind of, there was sort of something that was kind of missing and I was looking for. And I think when I went to a queer therapist, I was like, this is it. I don't have to do this kind of explanation of, and some people that works for, but at the time when I was going, it was like, I need that understanding, and not having to hold someone's hand, but I don't also want to then wipe out that everyone who isn't maybe identifying as queer or any other kind of minority can also work within these. I think it's the importance of training. But then it was also seeing queer people in these places. I think there's always, when I was growing up, it wasn't the best. There wasn't the best representation of queer people in media. We were kind of the butt of the joke. And so having a space where I could see myself in was important as well. And that's something that's a part of my practice, of trying to kind of help other people, have a model of what can be. I went away for a second there, but
I was thinking, it sounds like you're sort of saying something about the experience of being within therapy and this sort of like unspoken or unsaid, like you don't always have to explain part of your own identity in terms of your queerness or, something about this kind of, it's not to say that someone can completely identify with your personal experience, but not needing always to kind of go through something and kind of help educate someone else or to kind of be in that position with a therapist that.
I think it was important to have that. I think the kind of unspoken, the sort of the things that are outside of the norm, being queer, so that's being in a relationship with someone of the same gender, opposite, gender, depending on, where you're at. So I think it's then having a someone that's there with you and you're on the same playing field. And I think within training, I think it was always told not to self-disclose, not to self-disclose. I think actually within this, it's really important to, because there is that sort of barrier that then is removed. You can go, okay, cool. I know that at least in one sense, this is a safe space for this. I can bring myself authentically. Because I mean, really, what we're asking our clients to do is be their authentic self. So having that hidden would be, I think, for me, quite challenging. And then also having to have that internal, are they going to be okay with me being queer? Are they going to be have an issue with it? Are they going to, you know, I've heard horror stories from friends that have gone to therapists that have used kind of conversion therapy tactics involved in it, and it's then kind of how that kind of safe space is then eroded because you've gone with that and are maybe exploring gender and they're not accepting it. So I think it's really important to have one, you know, maybe it's one box, but it's one box that's ticked that you're like, okay, I can be authentically that self here.
And how do you work? Because I was thinking about this sort of, it's interesting, isn't it? And often in lots of our trainers, there's this idea that we shouldn't disclose anything at all. And that's something to be kind of challenged, perhaps, and like critical about. You're saying, I wonder, like, how you kind of manage that, if you know what I mean, in terms of sort of balance, or what it feels like to kind of disclose elements of your own identity.
Well, I'm very upfront about some of my all my profiles. I've got my pronouns that I kind of work. The way I work is queer affirming, and that's my experience. I think if I was to be doing this maybe 10 years ago, I would really struggle with that because I don't think I'd kind of come to that acceptance of that space yet. So I would have probably fallen into the non-disclosure side and then had this kind of, I think within it, I mean, even in the way I contract with clients, I'm always like, this, it's a small scene. Even it's London, it's huge. There's a real likelihood we're going to bump into each other. I regularly kind of bump into clients. I go to some sport events, like I go boxing and there's some like a queer boxing club and there's like lots of kind of people that you're like, oh, actually we might have seen each other there, and there's that kind of, so it's a lot of real transparency of we're likely going to see each other and that's okay. I always I'm like, I'll take the lead from you. If you ignore me, that's fine, but if you want to come over and say hi, kind of you have to explain who I am. I can't say and so within, yeah, I think I'm probably on the side of over disclosure on that side, just again for the, I think the safety of it as well, and knowing that people are out there and are open and comfortable. And
And it kind of makes me think, I guess it, as you're saying, like the hope is that we're kind of modeling something often for clients, isn't it? In terms of how can we explore parts of ourselves if the other person seems kind of removed to something, or not accessible, or I don't know, if there's no sort of representation of parts of ourselves in our therapist, maybe that can be quite prohibiting at times.
And I think because I work relationally, so the kind of relationship and the relational frameworks, how I integrate the different modalities, and I think that is, it's a big part is modeling and having a space of someone being open. It might not be what they want to be at the end of therapy, but having kind of that conversation, that person that is, I think is really important. And the modeling is, yeah, it's a big part of the work I do, is that I suppose if you look kind of psychodynamically and kind of in that relational framework, it is. Because I don't think we've had, again, going back to media and kind of parents, there isn't like a the normal, I'm going to put in quotation marks, but there isn't the, you know, if you have attracted someone of the opposite gender and you're cisgender, you're both cisgender, there's not going to be, there's that normal processing through school. Whereas when you're queer, there's a kind of, oh, you're hiding part of yourself. There's always that kind of term, the second adolescence, when you're in your 20s and you're exploring what you couldn't explore then. You know, that'd be a relationship with someone of the same gender, kind of all these, yeah. And if you're trans as well, then there's the kind of experience of coming out as well and exploring that side of things. So there's a big kind of part.
And that kind of makes me wonder about like what the sort of misconceptions people have about your work in a way. Kind of think about this like heteronormative, I guess, society that we live in and kind of the influences of that.
That's a really good question. I'm gonna
Yeah, it's a sort of big one, isn't it?
I think well, I suppose there's the one that kind of pops to head to my mind right now is the this kind of idea that queer people are kind of indoctrinating other people, bringing people into this, which I think is very problematic, and is a big part of the work, is that actually, no, we're just kind of going, we're here to kind of make things easier and give us a space and a voice. I think I've had people come to me to ask if they could, if I could support with, I suppose, with sort of repressing feelings of same-sex attraction, or around their gender as well. So that's something that I think people think is it's this sort of choice that we can kind of, I don't know, that as a therapist in this area, we can kind of mastermind it, where actually we're just kind of trying to make it as bearable at times for some people. I think it's, I don't think there's quite a lot of internalized homophobia, transphobia, biphobia. There's so much within it that we, yeah. So that would be, I think, the main one, but I'll think if there's any more, and maybe we'll come back to that.
And it does make me think like the impact of that internalized sort of phobia or hatred or kind of the intolerance, I guess, that society has had of parts of the self, particularly in relation to kind of identity and queerness. The impact of that, I guess, not only on the self, but like systems. I was thinking about the education system. I guess I was thinking about even sort of processes of training. And I wondered, I mean, and I think this is a probably broader conversation, you know, in relation to trainings generally, but what kind of areas your training perhaps didn't prepare you for or kind of felt lacking, you know, just kind of across the board, I guess.
Well, I think one thing within the training, I think there is the group sort of a process space always felt like a sort of, I don't know from everyone's experience, but people in my course, it felt very like there was a sort of, but again, this might be my process and I'm putting it on other people, but the kind of people are expecting you to be the token person that you have, anytime this conversation comes up, you've got to input because you know about it. And there was this sort of power dynamic of, oh, you're telling me about this and you're sharing a lot about yourself. And some people would be like, oh, thank you for that, I've relearned a lot. And then they wouldn't give anything back. So there's this real kind of, I think every time I tell someone that is thinking of training that's queer, I'm like, just try. And I didn't think I knew what I needed to be keeping myself safe, but I think it was that kind of share enough that you feel comfortable, but don't kind of give a lot because it's not always going to be reciprocated, and it's then really vulnerable position to be sat in when you're in a like huge group of 30 people and you're the only queer person, or there's like a few queer people, but yeah, you're quite in a vulnerable position within training as well. And I think just the, I think also the within it, I think what can happen is that LGBTQ can kind of get pushed all into one week of learning, and you're then learning about it all. And I think it's such an, there's so many different identities within it. I think things like asexuality gets missed out of the conversation a lot. Intersex, there's so many different, not variables, different identities that really can't just be explored in one day of here it is. There's great training courses that I've not attended them myself, but I've heard of that look at it. But I think within mainstream places, the reason I studied at where I studied was the kind of, it was a master's, there was funding, there was that. So it wasn't, there wasn't a choice, because again, it's very expensive to train. It's a real, I love it, it's a real privilege to have trained, but it was expensive. Yeah,
So,
so I think, sorry.
no, I was just thinking about this something about kind of becoming like the spokesperson or something that people look to you for input or the kind of learning and that. Yeah, I guess I can sort of relate to some of that in terms of my own identity, in terms of my own kind of mixed heritage identity, it's something about certain topics people kind of feel that they're silenced by somehow, or they're not able to interrogate parts of themselves, isn't it? Because I guess it's often the case that people think of sexuality and think that they also don't have a sexuality. You know, this sort of assumption that there's like a binary, there's a split, there's a kind of us and them, there's a, oh, we can learn from you rather than this is something we can all think about all the time in relation to ourselves and parts of ourselves. But the kind of difficulty with that, that people then look to you or to certain people to kind of be that spokesperson and sort of educate somehow.
Yeah. And I think there's that real, it's something I don't know how to work through. I think it's a whole probably course within it that needs to be done. But the like being able to sit and be wrong in it, and kind of, I think there was, It's a fine line because I think we've got people that maybe are being offensive, not meaning to be,
Yeah.
and people are getting hurt. But I think this is where the facilitators really need to be. There, I don't know. There needs to be maybe a specific training, but a training that can really manage and hold that space of, okay, that's hurtful, but let's see where maybe where it comes from, what where roots are, because I think we all are. We're in a racist, homophobic, sexist society. We've all kind of got these voices that pop into our head and say things that we don't necessarily believe, but it kind of just is the automatic what's been instilled through society. I think having this kind of non-defensiveness from both training courses, tutors, and pupils being able to kind of explore these things because they're everywhere. They're going to be, and I don't think we're going to change drastically, but I think we really need to look at how we can manage it so that everyone feels safe and held in the course and gets as much from it. Because I think actually, although I got a lot from the sharing, there's probably some other people that would have got a lot from kind of that vulnerable, oh, this is what my kind of automatic thought was. I don't believe it, but this is kind of where I've gone. And we explore that. But again, I don't know how that would be possible.
Yeah, and it's a kind of an interesting point, isn't it? Because I think there's something about this fear of being offensive that often shuts down conversation, shuts down curiosity, that mean people sit in that position of like, oh, I won't say anything because I don't want to offend. But actually, like you're saying, the work probably really needs to be done by those people, isn't it? Not the kind of people that are put in the position of being the spokesperson, but actually, how do I interrogate those parts of myself that I'm worried about being offensive, and what are my own biases, and how can I kind of start to understand those? And I guess really it's only through conversation, isn't it? And something about how do we have those conversations? And I guess that's a difficult thing to do. But the hope, I guess, would be people who are starting to kind of train to be therapists, and these are going to be things that we all need to confront. But yeah.
It's really important to confront them in that space, and I think I think it though also like it's a double-edged sword because it falls into the then there's the vulnerability or that needs to be brought out in the people that are affected because they need to then go, well, what you've said has hurt me, and here's why. And there's this kind of but hopefully maybe with the both sides being vulnerable, it might really kind of bridge gaps. And but it's a thought in my head that that I think definitely needs more research into it, really, to kind of, because I think there's like a hidden tax of people that are a minority in these spaces that and I remember getting kind of having conversations and it being like, oh, people aren't as far along as you, and it's like, well, that's not really then why is that my that feels like
Why
my
is that
fault.
my labor? Yeah.
Why am I having to re to kind of up my game and kind of accept their faults?
Yeah.
What's there?
Well, there are areas of, like, I don't know, bias or something, isn't it? Or the kind of, I guess, the fear. It makes me think of how much fear probably is related to this, and this, like, fear of offending or fear of confronting something within the self, whether that's their own parts of their own sexuality that haven't been explored, or, you know, whatever it might be, or identity. And it makes me kind of think, I guess this also translates very much into the profession, because this doesn't only exist then within training kind of environments, but of course these are people then that are going on to train and, you know, to be qualified. And I wonder as well kind of how that then plays out within the therapeutic kind of dynamic. And it's
I think that's like a worry of mine was the kind of when you were working in these spaces and that was the automatic, then you're like, oh, what's that going to be like for the client to access? And I think that's, sometimes when I am doing assessments with clients, I'm hearing of what's kind of gone in the past and what the kind of has happened in that. So you're then, as a therapist, you've got this kind of extra layer of like, oh, they really need to trust me. I'm gonna affirm this. I can say I'm gonna affirm it, and I think I am. But I think that can also be something that happens. But I think also that kind of non-defensiveness is a big part of my practice that I take in because I do make mistakes. And I have done, and I think that is where it can be really powerful to kind of address the what's happened and move through it. And I think I've done it recently with like I made a comment about ableism and how I went into rescue, and I kind of noticed that there was like a I've you know I noticed I'd rescued and I was like, oh, I'm just noticing that what's happened is that I've tried to save you here. And then they kind of went into a whole conversation about how everyone tries to rescue them and that kind of steals their voice. So then we really explored what their voice was, and having lots of people involved, it kind of really can the voice can get lost.
Yeah, so something about being able to acknowledge our own yeah, I don't know what the word is for that, but like those mistakes or those kind of areas of like realization, isn't it, without kind of being defensive about them.
Yeah,
And I
because
guess,
sorry.
yeah, sorry, no, go ahead.
I think we've got our own experience of the world. We all experience it so differently, and we all have different biases that maybe things like we don't really, aren't aware of that that's how we our internal world is working. So I think that's where it is a really fascinating. It's quite an uncomfortable place as well to sit with a client and be like, I've got it wrong. But I think within that, there's so much room for growth and getting it wrong and being able to admit that you've got it wrong. Also then that conversation of how it's for them.
And what it means of kind of other experiences where people have got it wrong and not said, and the kind of person's had to internalize that and kind of be with that discomfort. And it takes the responsibility, I guess, of the client to kind of call the therapist's attention to something and have to educate and, you know. But yeah, not easy work to do. I guess it was kind of making me think a bit about like umbrella terms, and you were kind of speaking a bit before about kind of all of the different facets of identity, and I guess how even a term like LGBTQIA plus, like there's so many different kind of variables or variations or identifications within that. Yeah, I guess I just wondered what you thought about that and that kind of the umbrella term.
Well, I think it's great to have a term that catches a lot of people, and I think that it can be good to be seen. And I think within Pride, and we've just, I mean, we finished Pride Month, but I think within, I know that there can be a real leaning towards gay and bisexual, well, probably gay men. So I think having it, there's a lot of bits that get lost. I think within specifically like asexual, intersex people, there's so many layers to it, and I think some people also inhabit different layers as well. Like some people are trans and bisexual, some people are trans and gay, some people are intersex and bisexual. So there's so many crossovers, and I think within it there is a thing that gets a bit lost. But I do, it's a tough one because I do it is needed and we do need it, but I think there are a lot of spaces, especially right now with kind of what's going on in politics with trans people and the trans bathroom, and is just there is like a and there's a dividing of some people want it to be LGB without the T, which I think really problematic because I think within it, one, we all our rights to a trans black woman, and we kind of wouldn't have anything without that. So I don't think this dividing. I think this is like a probably I could do like a 3-hour conversation on it. I don't think I'm doing it massive amounts of justice, but I think within it there is things that do get lost, and I think there is real sticking points within it, and it really needs to. I hope that we can come together, and I brought it in supervision because with working with trans people, there's a lot going on, and there's a lot of kind of safety planning of, but it doesn't feel like a. Feels like a real safety planning of I might have to leave the UK. If this happens, I need to go. And it's important to I forgot where I was going with that. It feels more real at the moment. I've had a complete brain fart. I'm really sorry.
Probably quite
That
kind of relevant in a way, though, isn't it? Like something of the difficulty of actually like contemplating some of these things, because it makes me think so often the word like safety gets thrown around in terms of therapy or people sort of feeling safe, but often there's like a real actual safety and kind of I might have to leave, or I'm actually in threat or in danger kind of physically. So maybe I was thinking about the sort of disconnection there, and maybe that's something that's very difficult to kind of really contemplate, that actually affects people, that it's not just a kind of I feel uncomfortable, but it's real lack of safety.
And I think within rights kind of disappearing really quickly, and what we've seen in America, and I feel like sometimes we trickle down and we get a minier version of it, and I think it's really, it's a sad place, and I think I did, it's a sad place to be in.
Yeah. And it kind of makes me wonder, like, how do you balance like the emotional load, I guess, of this work and kind of, I don't want to use the word like self-care because I feel so like contrived, but you know, like how do you kind of create space for yourself or look after yourself in some way?
Well, that's, I think, within, I'm still in therapy myself just because it is the dual processing is so similar. I've had the same kind of thoughts of, is the UK the place for me? Is it where I want to kind of be? Because it doesn't feel like it's accepted. You know, we're in this sort of really going back to two genders, I suppose, it is how it feels to me. So I think within it, it is, there's a kind of therapy being my main practice, and then some sort of body practice that lets me kind of feel anger, feel, just feel, I think we feel what's going on in the world, and supervision, as I'm you know, I'm recently joined a collective, and I'm hoping that space will be another space where I can kind of explore these feelings to offload, because you know we are in a horrible time in that experience, and I think it's, yeah, I'm hoping it changes, and I'm hoping we move forward, but I don't know at the moment.
And it makes me think about how much like being a therapist is kind of political, really, because of, you know, issues that we may kind of experience ourselves and that of what clients bring. And I think it, yeah, that feels so important that that's kind of trickled down into the training and that people really sort of get to that and understand it's taking a kind of political stance in a way. It may not be kind of declaring all your own political kind of motives or whatever, but it's the action of being a therapist and kind of being with this material is political kind of by itself.
And we're also asking, I think, within queer spaces, it's kind of being told to kind of tone yourself down. You're being too much, you're being this or that. And I feel like my work is to kind of allow people to have a space where they can be their authentic self, which is, in this area, very political. It is what we're being told to not do, you know, to kind of tone down, to feel safe, to, you know, code switch so that you can be in a certain place and not feel at risk. And there's so much within it that is political. And I think it's, I remember, again, going back to my therapist, but I remember being like, I'm big activist, go to lots of protests, and I remember saying, I'm really worried that I might get, you know, in trouble for going to a protest. And then he was like, well, actually, no, it's political. You need to fight for these rights. And I think it is so intertwined. And I think that goes back to the disclosure bit. It's really this fine line of disclosing, because also, again, within, if you're going to a therapist, you want to know that there's some political crossover, because what you're bringing specifically as a queer person is against what some things are being posted about and said, and you know,
Yeah,
it's
you're sort of taking a position on it. Yeah, you're not just kind of saying, I'm gonna not, yeah, I'm not responding or even aware. Yeah. And I guess that kind of makes me think as well about like theory and practice or something. And I wonder if there are kind of like particular theories or authors or frameworks that you find helpful, or I guess I was thinking about how much sort of psychodynamic or therapeutic theory and sort of writing is very kind of heteronormative and focused in this very specific way. Yeah, so I just wondered about that.
I think, yeah, I can see specifically, like, with certain theorists, again, the psychodynamic is very maternal. There's the kind of, I think, the secure attachment, and kind of that's shifted, but it is very focused on a kind of heteronormative, there being a family, there being a sort of space within some people that are queer. They've been kind of, their families kicked them out, so they don't have that. They've had to kind of create a chosen family that kind of supports them. I tend to kind of use theory very loosely. I don't like to kind of come in and maybe pathologize people and go, this is what it is because of X, Y, and Z, because one, I don't feel like I can do that judgment of what it was like with her mum, and you know, I'm trying to think
And
any.
even sort of assuming that they have a mum, you know, there's something about this like mother and infant kind of dynamic, isn't it? That's very restrictive to view somebody in that way and as if that's what it should be and that's the right way or something that I guess is a bit.
And I think there's some of the theories that take it to the kind of the Oedipal and is that Electra complex, where it's then being gay as like a response to this that something didn't quite get met, and it's then this kind of again this there it feels like there's a pathology and we can treat someone that's experiencing that, when I just think most people are, you know, I don't think anyone, if there was a choice, would choose to be queer because it's putting their head against up the parapet. I think I'm really happy being queer. I love being queer. But I think in the kind of the choice element, I think it's such a reductionist kind of example of like kind of, because I think trying to think of any theories, I think I just tend to kind of really, I think, is it forgotten who says it, and I'll probably get told off by one of my tutors, but the kind of holding the theory loosely when you're with a client and just being with the client is more how I, you know, kind of what works for them, what hurts them, is
Being
where
the
I'm
client
at.
here and now, yeah, and that relational element again, I guess, isn't it?
Yeah,
Yeah.
because I think we are all in relation with each other and having a safe enough space. I don't think there can really be a true safe space for people that are out of the kind of cis heterosexual white population, probably more men than, I think, no, I'm not saying probably more, more men, you know. There is this sort of being a space that's safe enough, is really important, because I think when we look at a safe space, is there any space that's safe for us? And if we're outside of that kind of community, yeah.
It makes me think, like, I guess my question about theory, you know, it's interesting, is it perhaps when we're training, there's something about this theory being so important. And of course it is,
Yeah.
we need to kind of understand concepts, but something about the reality of the work we do and this like disconnect somehow between, I don't know, I'm thinking of often I read like a case study and it presents like, oh, this ex client came to me and they had all these issues and after, you know, however much time, suddenly everything was fine. And that's not my experience of personally being in therapy, but it's also not my experience as a therapist that
Yeah.
actually so often it's so unknown and it's complicated and the transferences are sort of constantly changing and you know,
Yeah.
you don't really know what's going on. It's kind of remaining curious and wondering that kind of
Yeah.
thing important. And it's messy and it's uncertain and it's about this sort of perseverance with that process rather than trying to kind of, I don't know, solve something.
Yeah. I think I see it as trying to just like exist the best way that you can. There will still be things that come up, because I think within the world it's so uncertain, you can't be like, okay, I've cured myself of depression because I've now met maybe like the tick box for depression, but actually there's so many individual things that people are experiencing that are so different. And yeah, and I think within that as well, you've got people experiencing like gender euphoria and dysphoria at different times, that there's no, with my gender as well, sometimes I feel not non-binary enough, sometimes I feel too much, sometimes I never am in this, I'm there'll be moments where I'm in that kind of euphoric state, but it's never, it's quite fluctuating. And I think having that view that the world is fluctuating and you're part of it and existing in it, it's, you know, and it's then how to best manage it.
Be with it, isn't it? And to kind of be curious and
Yeah.
understand it or think about it and still not the answers,
Yeah.
kind of be alongside somebody in that process, I guess.
Yeah.
But it does also make me think, you and it'd be amazing if you wrote about this and contributed, you know, in terms of not to say that you need to be the spokesperson, but
Yeah.
it's kind of hard again, isn't it? Kind of like, how can we contribute in a way that doesn't feel like now I'm sort of educating everyone? However, at the same
Yeah.
time, I clearly have a lot of expertise and kind of interesting contribution.
Think I would feel the imposter syndrome would be massive, but I think within it, I don't know if we need to maybe like have that real like we center ourselves in it. Like I would center myself as like a white middle class queer person from Scotland, Glasgow. So there would be then like a kind of almost like when you do research, you're like, this is me and this is what the conflicting things and this is what might go right and will probably go wrong or could go wrong, and we can then explore it. But I think within it, I suppose my fear is with AI that we're going to get really less critical. I really need to look at where people are coming from within, specifically in therapy. I think there is a lot of people, it was with CBT, I practice it, but it's not my core. I wouldn't go to it, but I think there's a lot of research that says it's great for this, this, and this, but then we kind of miss the, again, that unknown, that like, well, what, that doesn't always solve things. We can't always go, right, you've done X, Y, and Z, you're cured, and
Yeah, and off you go. Yeah.
actually
Yeah.
having the kind of sitting in that unknown, that discomfort, that kind of place can be really, and that stuckness can be really, is really important.
And it makes you think, like, I guess the imposter syndrome is so part of it, isn't it? And perhaps there's, I don't know, I often think, I wonder how many therapists are extroverts, but there's something of this, like, the quiet practice that we're all doing kind of over there, isn't it? And actually kind of taking up space to say, I have a contribution to make or whatever, perhaps feels quite difficult, but it's almost ironically, that's exactly the work we need to hear about. You know, it's this sort of tension and the power dynamic of what it means to write something or to be an academic or, you know, and again, the kind of internalized parts of that we have, and going back to this sort of heteronormative kind of theoretical viewpoint or something.
Yeah, because we are learning from theorists that are from quite a long time ago, and we're in a very different era of the world. So I think within that, yes, we can take it, but I do think it needs to move to a bit more of a how it's applied now, how it kind of can be or can't be adaptable, because I think sometimes these theories, I think the, I don't want to slate theories, but I think there are parts of it I'm just like, it can be, we can use it, but I don't think there's certain people that I can see that are just like, this is it because of X, Y, and Z, and they've formulated a client, and you're like, you've met them 3 times. How do you,
How do you know? Yeah. How can we ever know? Yeah.
how can they, I think also if we're looking at it, how can they ever know as well that this is, you know, we're in this, so I think the, it's
Yeah.
a, it needs to, change a bit. And I think within the training in general, I think it can be seen as like a quality diversity tick box that they've spoken about LGBT, when actually there's so many other voices that need to be in that space. There needs to be trans, non-binary, asexual, intersex people that are having that conversation and from their experience. But then this is again on that flip side of then we're using people as the spokesperson. But I think within a training space, it should be informed by people that are being spoken about, and that's as well with race,
Yeah.
class, and everything. It just needs to be involved.
Yeah, and I guess it comes back to the idea of representation somehow, doesn't it? That so often perhaps workforces are predominantly one gender, one race, one kind of, you know, whatever category you want to think about. And I guess without that representation, it can't be sort of from within, that it's then very difficult to kind of have some of these conversations if there aren't those experiences that can be kind of held and shared, and people can kind of see themselves, I guess, in the performance around them.
That's the one thing that I think there needs to be more diversity in this practice, this field, because I think there's so many, there'd be so, it'd be so good to see yourself as a younger person going, I'm going to therapy and it's someone that I get on with because they're the same class as me, they're the same ethnicity, the same gender, that or they're exploring their gender, or they're open to me exploring it, and having sort of a space that's safe enough again to just be yourself and bring all you to it. And I think that's, I think a bit, quite a big downfall of the profession that we're kind of having these conversations so far into it. It's probably quite a big statement there I've made, but
But important.
important. I'll just be stricken off after this.
But it kind of makes me think about, like, why these conversations are so important to have, you know, and to kind of explore these parts and how we can kind of contribute to all of it by having these conversations and being open to the thinking and the curiosity.
Yeah, I think that's where I'm really fortunate to work in queer spaces within. We do, this is like supervision would be this. It would be us talking about what we are bringing to the room as well as the client, because I think it is as important that we might be, unintentionally, or I'd hope not, but intentionally homophobic, racist, anythingist, or because it happens. And I think that's the where the there's that kind of cancel culture sort of thing that where it's like we need to make this we need to make mistakes to learn. I don't think all, I'm not making a statement that all mistakes should be made, but I think within it there is a space to be like, oh, okay, I messed up. What was
Have
that?
reflect, yeah.
And I think that kind of is, and it's really important.
I was wondering, Ewan, if there's anything else that we haven't really talked about that you feel you'd like to or is kind of important?
Think the price of therapy is something I'm, I think within it, it's such a privilege to be going to therapy. I think I remember when I was studying, it was like, oh God, here's therapy again coming out every week. And you were like, this is, it's an important part of the course, but I think it within it's then another barrier that stops certain people being able to access to train, also to access therapy. So my kind of practice, I use a sliding scale so people can kind of pay more that then subsidizes people that can't pay as much. It's just early days. I've not got any real like facts on if it works, but what I've heard from other people, there's a few people in America that are doing similar stuff just to kind of make it affordable. And I think a lot of queer spaces and clubs and events I go to is done on that, where you pay more on kind of privilege in a sense. Because yeah, I think it would be great if we could all afford 100, £200 therapy, but that hasn't been my experience. And it then I think it then just further pulls out who can and can't attend and become a therapist, because if it's part of the course, you need to do a certain amount by a certain standard of therapist, and then it kind of just keeps like creeping up. And then it's also, is that therapist going to be the therapist for you, or are you just there because you need to tick a certain box? So I think that within it is really important. And I think within working with trans and non-binary people, there's not a lot of people have got money. There's not that same privilege that I mean, I've got privilege of being kind of male passing. If you looked at me in the street, there's no kind of I've not lost a job because of my gender identity. And there are people that are losing jobs and are kind of not able to, because they we live in a transphobic society, so people are losing jobs. And I think that if we're kind of going the way things are going, that might happen more and more, because people feel like they can police the toilet now because of the new rules. So
And
yeah,
then there's clearly impact on mental health, and it's the kind of cyclical thing, isn't it? So
exactly,
the
yeah.
support is ever more growing, really.
And then there's homelessness that would come into that, and other kind of ways of trying to find work that aren't maybe the kind of in a employment basis, there's like sex work and stuff. So I think within it, there's a, I think, yeah, there needs to be like a real, and which is why I'm passionate about it, and why I think I'm hoping that I can have a job on the side that maybe pays the basic bits, and then I don't need to charge 60, 70, 80, £100 for a 50-minute session.
Yeah, that does feel really important, something about this kind of accessibility and inclusivity, that it's not kind of creating more barriers. I guess it's impossible, isn't it, to remove all, but there's something about trying to think about that dynamically and how you can kind of help to appease some of it where possible or something that feels
Yeah.
really
And if that is the one big issue, then it being something that can then just be easily managed or discussed within therapy. And I think that's something that I've benefited from with therapists as well. I've said, I can't quite afford this. Can we reduce? And that's, thankfully worked. But I think within it, it's yeah, it's something that I'm really, I've it's a big part of my practice, is being for people.
That sounds really important. Well, yeah, I wonder if that's a good place for us to stop you. And it's been so interesting to speak to you. And thank you so much for kind of bringing all of your thoughts and areas of expertise and stuff. It's really like just nice to have a dynamic conversation. I think that's, yeah, just really lovely to have. So thank you so much for your time.
Thank you for having me. It's great to chat.